I'll begin with the title and try to explain it. You'll help me with the title. The title is to understand the differences between Sefer Shmot and Sefer Dvarim. Who has ever heard of a difference between Shmot and Dvarim? Or let's start with something we sing about every Friday night. Yeah, which one? Remember we sing about that? We're so happy about our Bible critics. What do we say? Shamor v'zachor b'dibur echad, which is an answer to a question. Because when you read the Ten Commandments in Sefer Shmot, it says, Zachor etim ha-shabbat ha-katro. You read them in Dvarim, and it says, Shamor. So, it's an obvious question, which I think Chumash wants you to ask. Chazal have a beautiful answer, which is, what's their answer? What do you mean? How is that possible? Which is a great question, but you can say two things. Any teenager can do that. Say two things at the same time. So for sure God can. Say, said, I meant this, I said this. And guess what the Bible critics do with that? To them, it's an indicator that what? Different authors, different time periods, and the rest is what's called the Idech Zogmor. Know what that means? Do you know your Talmudic lesson? The rest is only continuation of the same idea. The goal of today's share is to try to understand, in my opinion, what's the reason for the differences. Obviously, we're not going to go in the direction of Bible criticism. We're going to try to understand from within Chumash itself the reason why there's so many presentations and laws in Sefer Shmot that are different than Dvarim. Anyone know some other ones that are popular? Eved Ivri. What's the law of Eved Ivri?
It says, Olam.
Yeah.
And the other one is,
Yovel. Yeah, Yovel. So that's the question, what's considered Olam? So the answer is simple, that one. But the presentation. Now, there's another question, why the need for the repetition? That's another big question, but repetition doesn't seem to bother Chumash, does it? If you've been reading last week's Bayikal Pkudei, Chumash, within the own book, it repeats itself, so don't be surprised if it repeats in different books. Any other differences? But when it comes to Shabbat itself, it's really cute. You think about this at Kiddush. What's the reason for Shabbat according to Sefer Dvarim, according to Sefer Shmot? Why do we keep Shabbat? Zecher b'maseh bereshit. Okay. And according to Sefer Dvarim, what's the reason? Remember Zecher, they set Mitzrayim? That's not really Pshat and Dvarim either, but there's definitely a difference, which we'll have time to see. We could list another 20, 30, if not more. But instead of explaining all the differences, I want to understand why there's a difference. And I think it's real simple. One is that we, most of us think that Sefer Dvarim, but you tell me, what do most people think Sefer Dvarim is? Don't be afraid. I wanted to hear that. What? So Moshe is reviewing for them all the what? All the laws or all the stories or both? What would you say? Yeah, what's the traditional approach? And where were those laws written the first time? And where? In Shmot, and Vayikra, and Bamidbar, etc. And then Moshe reviews them one last time. And can't seem to get them right. That's one approach which is classic. Now, there's a reason why we're not so familiar with that approach. I mean, we're familiar with the approach, but can't really articulate it. A, because no one really says that. Everyone says that. But it's not based on anything. And simply not true. I might have done that share before, but I'll go over the main points. In common, what I call in Mama Lushin, in street talk, a shul talk, we'll call it. When you have shul talk, ask anybody what's Sefer Dvarim, and they always come and tell you it's a repeat of Chumash, a review of Chumash. What do they call it in Latin? Deuteronomy? What's that mean? Second teaching. What's the first teaching? What's the Unoronomy? What's the first teaching? Or Ishto, I don't know what there's in Latin. What's the first teaching? The first four books of Chumash. And the last book, we have a review, like every course in college. The last week is review. That's not Sefer Dvarim. If it's one thing I hope you come home with today, I want you to understand what Sefer Dvarim is. Because it's not what everyone claims it is. Because for some reason, I'm calling it street talk because the rabbis don't say that either. Okay? Street talk is it's a review. Because we think it's a review, we don't bother reading it. No. Before. And we think it's a review, a little bit different here and there. And we also, when do we read it? It's during the summer. During the summer, no one's in shul, people are in camp, there's no school going on. You follow? So we don't pay attention. And comes the end of the book, it's Rosh Hashanah and Kippur, who has time for Chumash? We have holidays to learn about. So the first part we're going to do in our share is to understand what Dvarim is. I'll just give you an example. Are there any stories from Sefer Bereishit and Sefer Dvarim? Perfect answer. Not one. Not even Reuven and Tamar. Yehuda and Tamar. Not a review. Avram, the five kings, four, nothing. Okay. How about Shmot? Any stories from Shmot in Sefer Bamidbar? In Sefer Dvarim? The 10 plagues coming out of Egypt? Okay. There's two stories. The first one is what happened at Har Sinai, which is very different. That'll be the main thing we're going to study today and understand why. Because the story of how the Torah was given, the Ten Commandments themselves, and how they were given is very different. And for the Bible critics, that's like an anchor. And we'll see what I think is a misunderstanding. And the other question is the story of the golden calf. What, the golden calf? Does he call it? They definitely have the story. Yeah. I mean, it says that chatzatem asher, at the egel, but sarafti oto. He mentions the egel. Now, and that's about it. How about the Mishkan? Not a word of it. Doesn't mention the Mishkan at all. It's separate Dvarim. The Maraglim is going to be, that's from Bamidbar, that's going to be in Dvarim, but again, totally different view of it. And there's so many stories that are a little bit similar, but so different, that leads again to the conclusion it must be some different version of the same story. What we're going to try and do today, Vayikra, by the way, the laws of Vayikra, you'll almost find none of them in Dvarim, except for Shemitah, but a totally different law of Shemitah. Very few laws of Vayikra in Dvarim. There's no laws from Bamidbar in Dvarim. Basically, Dvarim, and most of the laws in Dvarim, almost all of them are brand new to the reader. So the first part of the Shirtay, we're going to understand what happened. And to understand what happens in Dvarim, first you have to understand what happens in Shemot. That'll be easier to talk about because we've been reading about it for the last 3-4 weeks in Shul. Am Yisrael comes out of Egypt, correct? I was going to take the first 5 minutes, 3 minutes, and we're going to review what's happening in Sefer Shemot to understand what that book is about, and to prove to you that Chumash is not simply a diary, a play-by-play of here's what happened. It wasn't written that way, and wasn't meant to be read that way. It's often misunderstood that way. But Chumash, what Sefer Shemot is going to talk about, is going to be one very basic thing which we're going to follow. We're going to explain Sefer Shemot as a story of the developing relationship between God and His people. A relationship that began in Sefer Bereishit, where He planted the seeds, where the concept of a nation representing God, and a chosen nation, and a land being set aside where that nation is going to represent God, and have that relationship, began in Sefer Bereishit. It plays itself out in Sefer Shemot. And therefore, what's the topic of the first 12 chapters or so? You tell me. What's the topic of the first 12 chapters of Shemot? Coming? How God takes us out of Egypt. The whole, what we call Yitzhak Mitzrayim. Remember, every year we have that family gathering and we talk about it? That's called the story of Yitzhak Mitzrayim. And God, you know, puts us in, takes us out, and saves us like He promised. He fulfills His covenant. We come out of Egypt, and we have a mitzvah then to remember every year to bring Korban Pesach. We have one little mitzvah which relates to coming out of Egypt. We get to the desert. Where are we supposed to be going to? We're supposed to go to the land of Israel, like I promised. On the way, we have a lot of training detours, training sessions, etc. There's no food, there's no water. God solves those problems. We finally get to Mount Sinai. Correct? We're up to chapter 19. Have we gotten any laws yet? Yeah. We got the laws of Pesach. We got the laws of the man, but that's a law for the desert. We're getting ready. We heard about Shabbat a little bit. But now we're ready. And what should these laws be about? What would we expect these laws to be about? Why do we need to get laws before we go to Israel? Or if I reword the question, why do we get 613 and they only have 7? Simple question. Why is it that we get 613? There's two ways. Why do we get 613 and they only have 7? Or why are we stuck with 613 and they get away with 7? You follow? Depending on your attitude. Yeah. What do you mean by Nam Kadosh? We're a nation chosen by God to represent Him. And the methodology, or the technique, the technology by which we represent God are the mitzvot that we receive. And therefore, we come to Har Sinai, not just to get laws. Before we get any laws at Har Sinai, what happens first? There's a covenant. That's chapter 19. We get to Mount Sinai. The first thing we do, God makes a proposal, a proposition. Remember, Shemot Yishmu B'Koli U'Shmartem Et Briti. I'm assuming you remember that concept. We get to Har Sinai. We're offered a covenant. What do we say to that proposition? Okay. In Chumash, we say Naseh, according to Chazal, Naseh V'Nishma. We accept that covenant with a certain wording. And because we accepted the covenant, what needs to follow? A set of laws. There's a big question in Sefer Shemot, how are we going to hear those laws? And that's a really fun topic. There's a whole thing, do we hear them directly from God? Or do we hear them through Moshe? And first God says one way, the people want this way, that way. By the time it's over, how many do we hear from God? 2, maybe 8, maybe 10. But we're standing in front of God. The first 10 we get in a very special manner. And then we blow the whistle and say, Moshe, no, enough is enough. We got the point. And we'll hear the rest from you. And after that point, the rest of the laws come from Moshe. Now, where does Moshe receive these laws? The first 10 we're standing at Mount Sinai. The rest of the laws, how do we get them? Moshe goes up Mount Sinai to get them, and the people stay back at the camp, and Moshe's going to come down and tell them. We're going to begin our share when Moshe goes up for those first 40 days to see what happened. But after Moshe goes up for those first 40 days, he goes up to get the laws. What does Sefer Shemot focus on? What laws? Mostly on the Mishkan. When Moshe goes up, we're going to read that. The last 5, but 20, 15 chapters of Shemot, from Parshat Truma to Tzaveh, Hafek Kitisa, Vayakab Kudei, focuses almost exclusively on the Mishkan. And the story of Chet Egel. The story of the golden calf. But the story of Chet Egel is not a story about the golden calf. It's a story of renegotiating the contract. And if you look at Sefer Shemot carefully, what I want to show you is the first part we get out of Egypt, we get to Har Sinai. From the moment we get to Har Sinai, it's all about contract. It's all about covenant. I'm sorry. Contract's part of the covenant. It's all about a covenant. And I want to show you why. And I'll show you how simple it is. We get to Mount Sinai. What's the first thing God talks about? Let's make a deal. You want to be my nation? And we answer yes. Because we answer that contract, we get the laws of the contract. What are the first 10 commandments called? Aseret, remember? Advarim. And what are they written on? And what do we call those luchot? Luchot habrit. Ask any kid at the Seder who knows too. They luchot habrit. Why are they called luchot habrit? Because those 10 statements, or commandments, what we call the 10 commandments, represent and reflect the essence of the covenant between God and His people. Then Moshe goes up to get more laws, which we call Parshat Mishpatim. When Moshe comes down with those laws, and that's where we're going to start our share from, we're going to see Moshe is going to make a covenant. That's the Naseh V'Nishma covenant, the one we all talk about, based on the laws of Parshat Mishpatim. And the rest of the book is about the Mishkan. What I want to show you is that the laws of Parshat Mishpatim are also part of a contract. Got that? The Mishkan is going to be a symbol of that contract, of the covenant. And the story of the golden calf is going to be the fine-tuning of that contract, of that covenant. Remember? But what's the end game after the sin of the golden calf? What do we end up with? What's that lead to? No. That's a different sin. The golden calf doesn't bring us to 40 years. A new contract, and what's special about that contract? What does it have that the other contract didn't have? Without that, we'd be gone. What comes? The 13 attributes of mercy. That makes the relationship livable. And the first contract is really strict, almost impossible to survive under. And the new contract is going to be a relationship which might be a little more distant, a little more unclear, but workable. Because it includes what's called Midot HaRachamim, God's attributes of mercy. So what we're going to see now, the first part of the shir, is how Sefer Shemot is primarily about the covenant, the contract, and the fine-tuning of that contract. And that's going to be the focus of the book. We're going to see afterwards that Sefer Dvarim is going to be more about the laws themselves. Got that? So we're going to take the next 5-10 minutes. You have a chumash in front of you. If anyone needs a chumash, there's over here a couple more. We're going to begin in chapter 24. Sefer Shemot, Perek Chavdalet. The very end of Parshat Mishpatim. I have a page announcer. 321. I have you all on heard simply because, we're all on the same page. If you want to use a different Tanakh, it's fine. I'm purposely not telling the story in Parsha Yitro because you're familiar with that. If I follow the laws, again, the story coming out of Egypt, the courtship, God says, look what I did for you, how could you say no? And fulfilling the background to the covenant. That all the events coming out of Egypt lead up to the contract. Remember what God says before He gives us the contract? He says, Atem ritem asher asitid l'mitzvayim v'esatchem ha-kanfein asherim v'aviyatchem elai. Chapter 19, verse 4, if you want to mark it down on your notes. And then, v'atem shmot yishmu v'kolu yishmatem et briti. Before God makes the proposition of the covenant, He says, look what I did for you. Where do I find out what God did for us? The first 18 chapters of the book. We get to our Sinai, and we proved already the first 10 commandments are about covenant. Because what do we call them? Luchot HaBrit. Luchot HaEdut, their testimony, and they're to the covenant. Then Moshe goes up to get another set of laws called Parshat Mishpatim, which is Parshat Mishpatim, pretty much in its entirety. At the very end of those laws, in Perek HaDalad, we're going to go right to Pasuk Gimel. The first two Pasukim talk about a ceremony that's going to take place. In Pasuk Gimel, on page 321, verse 3, it says, Perek HaDalad, Pasuk Gimel, Vayavo Moshe v'yisaper lam et kol divrei Hashem et kol ha-mishpatim, v'yan kolam kol achad v'yomru kol adrim asher diber Hashem naseh. Moshe comes down from Mount Sinai and tells the people all the things that God told them, all the mishpatim, and all the other instructions God gave them, and the people answer, we'll do it. Now we need it in writing. Pasuk Dalet. Vayichtov Moshe et kol divrei Hashem. Moshe writes them down. He gets up in the morning. He makes a kiddush. See the source of a kiddush here? He builds a mizbeach. It's fleshiks. He brings korbanot, olot and shlamim. They're all together. There's a ceremony. They're going to take the blood. They're going to sprinkle it on the people. We can skip right to verse 7, to Pasuk Zayin. Vayikach sefer abrit. He took the covenant, the book of the covenant that he'd written down. He's going to read it in public. Moshe reads out the contract, the deal, the basic idea of this agreement, and the people in unison answer in this public ceremony, we're going to keep it. Then, as a symbol of that covenant, in Pasuk Chet, Moshe takes the blood from the korbanot and sprinkles it on the people. And then he tells them, this is the blood, symbol of the covenant of this. And what I just explained, that the laws of Parshat Mishpatim are part and parcel of the covenant. Now, what's really neat here is that this covenant, what's a bigger madriga? What's a bigger level? Accepting the covenant without knowing what the laws are, or accepting it knowing what the laws are? What do you think is better? You know what the answer to a question like that's always going to be. It's a little of both. What's the advantage of accepting a covenant blindly without knowing what you're getting into? Yeah? Yeah. We call it marriage, pretty much. It means you're accepting something, you're getting into something, but you're so much trust and there's so much identification with the partnership that whatever it'll be, I'm willing to do because I agree with this idea. We initial the agreement, let's say, in Parshat Yitro. We get the Ten Commandments and a sampling, Parshat Mishpatim. If we have time, we'll see a Ramban on that. And then, after we get a first sampling of laws, then what do we say? Then we have a full ceremony, and now that I've heard what they are, now I have a sampling of what it's about, now I say Nasa V'Nishma. And therefore, the covenant is not an event, it's a process. Understand? It happens over and over in Chumash. A lot of things we treat as events are really more like a process. Coming out, Geula, redemption. It's not an event, it's a process. Tshuva, it's classic. Ask any Rosh Yeshiva Elul time. Tshuva is not an event, it's a process. There's no one moment beforehand, not, and afterwards, yes. It's a process that grows and develops. And in Pasuk Tet, we're almost done. Moshe goes up with Aaron, Nadab, and Abihu, and they see God, and they bow down. And basically, the leaders of the Jewish people go up Mount Sinai to accept the covenant on behalf of the people of Israel, and I finish the covenant. Then, look in Pasuk Yod Bet. We're on page 322. After the contract is official, and we finish the ceremony, and we're all done, Vayomer Hashem Moshe, Alei al Ahara, come up the mountain now, Vayashem and be there, Ve'etna lachat luchot ha'even, Vatorah v'mitzvah asher katavti lerotam. Come up the mountain to get, we're going to get this in writing, I'm going to write for you on these tablets, the first 10 commandments, and in addition to that, the Torah and the mitzvah, which I've written to teach them. And therefore, why is Moshe going up to Har Sinai now? To get the rest of the 613. Torah, mitzvah, whatever they are, it's a little complicated. Moshe's up there for 40 days. What happens back? Oh, back at the ranch, is that nice? But what happens back at the camp? The famous sin with the golden calf. Moshe comes down, has to deal with a crisis, prays 40 days, goes back up for another 40 days, and then the rest of the events is fine-tuning that covenant. That's the story of the golden calf and the 13 midot of Rachamim. In addition to that, what else does Sefer Shmuel talk about from Parsha Truma on? Just the Mishkan. And the Ramban's approach here is so beautiful. What does he say? Guess what the Mishkan is going to be? God doesn't need a place to live. Rather, we need a symbol of that covenant. It's such a simple and beautiful approach Ramban has. Why do we need a Mishkan? I think I can use the Stanley Cup here. We need a symbol of an understanding. If you win, what's that called? The Stanley Cup? Must be some kind of hockey thing. When you win a championship, you need a trophy. But the trophy is a piece of metal. But it's much more than a piece of metal. It's a symbol of an achievement. Also, you have symbols of relationships, like a wedding ring. And trophies and things like that and a plaque. They're just a bunch of metal, but they're much more than that. Because human beings need symbols to relate to ideas. And the way the Ramban explains the Mishkan is this is going to be a symbol of our relationship. And the symbol, every detail in that symbol is going to have meaning. And therefore, don't be surprised if the essence of our existence as a nation is our relationship with God, and the Mishkan represents that relationship, don't be surprised that Chumash spends a lot of time talking about the symbol of the relationship, because that symbol of relationship can be a very good guide for us how to understand that relationship. Just like the story of our forefathers in Sefer Bereshit, it's not a bunch of historical stories. How does Chazal understand them? Remember, Masel Vatzim El Abanim? They're foreshadowing Jewish history, they're patterns in Jewish history. How to interpret them, you can argue. But the rabbis understand them not as just a bunch of stories that happen, but stories that build our nation and pretty much they don't predetermine, but they foreshadow and give direction to the future of our relationship with God. In the same way, the details of the Mishkan are going to be symbols and ideas that represent our connection to God. And therefore, the center is going to be not an idol, and the center is going to be, the very, very center of all this is going to be, the Aron isn't the symbol of God. The Aron is the housing for the Luchot, because our relationship is through the laws we keep. It's in one way very similar to other religions, but in many ways very, very different. What we always have a tendency to do is, we see, we're totally different than the Goyim, right? They have idols and we have Torah. But you look at the Mishkan, it looks like an idol again. We do things that are very similar, but the slight little changes are what we learn from. The same thing, they also have creation stories, don't they? We have creation stories. They're similar, but the little differences is what we learn from. That's when you understand the setting that Torah has been given in, you can really appreciate all the little details, because it's the tiny little changes that are significant in our relationship with God, that explain our relationship. So if I want to understand what's happening at Sefer Shmot, I'm not getting a play-by-play of here's what happened, here are the laws. I'm getting a play-by-play of how our relationship with God develops and the symbol of that relationship. And therefore, the focus of Sefer Shmot is going to be the Mishkan, because it's a symbol. And hence the repetition and the details without going to what they mean. Where am I going to find out about what did Moshe Rabbeinu get during this first 40 days? When Moshe was up for the first 40 days, he gets a whole set of laws from God. That's what we just read. But Sefer Shmuel doesn't tell us what laws he got up there during those 40 days. It just tells us he went up to get laws. We don't find out what they were. The only thing Sefer Shmuel talks about is the laws of the Mishkan, which could have been given in the first 40 days, second 40 days, a topic we're not going to go into. But it's an argument. But what are the laws he gets during those 40 days? Not what symbols. What laws did he get? There's a whole book about them. And guess what that book's going to be? That's Dvarim. And that's the main point of this year. You follow? Sefer Dvarim. Yeah, question? What? What kind of laws? Okay. There'll be laws of Vayikra as well. Yeah. Those laws are what's called laws about Kedusha. I'll try to oversimplify. In the end of Sefer Shmuel, there's a big question. Is God going to be in our midst, yes or no? Will God dwell with us? Remember, after Chet Ego, God says, I can't dwell with you. You're an Amksha Oref. I'm not coming with you. And Moshe begs, come with us. And God says, I come with you. I'll kill you. And God says, no, come with us. And then God says, but if I come, we're in a catch 22. How do we resolve all that? We resolve that with God's attributes of mercy. And then Moshe prays, Yelech Hashem b'kirbeinu. If indeed you are going to be merciful, then please come with us, even though we're an Amksha, or even though we're a stiff-necked people, and forgive us. And God says, okay, I'll come back with you, but first, Vasu the Mikdash, remember, Vashachanti Betocham. Show me you care, build for me a Mikdash, and I'll come, not, and I won't come and live in the Mikdash, I'll come and live with you, with the people. I'll bring my Shekhinah back. If God's presence is not in our midst, what mitzvot wouldn't we have? If God's not dwelling with us, what wouldn't we have? We wouldn't have a Mishkan. If God's not going to dwell with us, He's not going to have an apartment with us. If He's not there, we can't come visit Him. And therefore, you can't bring Him korbanot. You can't have Aliyah LeRegel. And those mitzvot that relate to the fact that God's in our midst. There's a whole set of laws that only apply because God's in our midst, which are bringing korbanot to God, all the laws of Tumah and Tahorah, which there's tons of them in Sefer Vayikra, only relate to the fact that God's in our midst and we have to go visit Him. You go visit Him, you have to be ready. So before you go, you can't touch this, you can't touch that. You have to prepare yourself for that. God's in your midst, therefore, Kadoshim to you, Ki Kadosh, you're representing the God who's Kadosh, therefore you have to be Kadosh, therefore, here's how you have to act, because God's in your midst. God's in your midst, therefore the land has Kedusha. Therefore the Kohanim have almost every single law in Vayikra relates to Kedusha. In a certain sense that, but it all emanates from the fact that God's dwelling with you. If you're, let's say you live, wherever you live in your house, and let's say a big rabbi comes and is staying in your house, pretend you're normal, what we call modern Orthodox family. That's the standard. And all of a sudden, some big rabbi from Bnei Brak comes and moves into your house. What's going to change? You know the answer already. Right? There goes the TV. There goes... How are people going to talk? The way they talk will be different. How are they going to dress? A little bit different. What are they going to talk about? Understand the analogy? If God's presence is with you, that changes the way you're in school. The principal walks in the room, all of a sudden everyone sits up straight. You follow? It's human nature. And I've used that analogy. Those are the laws in Vayikra. And they flow beautifully from the end of the story of Shmuel. In Bamidbar, there aren't too many laws, but the laws in Bamidbar are long in Vayikra, a topic in itself, which requires a whole shiur, more than a shiur. Understand? What I want to show you, the main laws in Sefer Dvarim are the laws, what I call the nitty-gritty. The laws that are going to make us a nation representing God. Day-to-day life. It's going to begin with attitude, meaning... To love God, to fear God. What laws am I talking about there? Remember Shema Yisrael, Bahavta Hashem Elokecha? There's a whole set of laws which are about attitude. And then we have what's called Chukim U'Mishpatim, which will be more practical laws. For example, how are you going to conquer the land? How does the Jewish nation go to war? What book talks about that? That's the book of Devarim. Right? Who goes to war, who doesn't go to war? How about setting up a judicial system, right? And finding judges and doing tzedek tzedoth. And having a court system in every single city, and then having a Supreme Court in a central place. What parsha is that? Shoftim. Where does it talk about how I expect our political leaders to act? Parshat HaMelech. How do we fight wars? Remember opening the first piece, and then how we fight, how we don't fight. Remember Kohen Mashuach Mechama. What happens if we find a dead body? Who's responsible? Remember Egla Rufa. Laws of society. Marriage laws, divorce laws, Zibum laws, etc. Laws of the marketplace. Laws of justice. That's going to be Parsha Ki Teitse. There's a whole set of laws, and yearly bringing first fruits to God, our national holidays, the Shalosh Regalim. The details of those, the idea that the collective pilgrimage holiday, going to Yerushalayim, agricultural times, that's going to be detailed in Dvarim. What korbanot to bring, what book's that going to be? What korbanot to bring, what animals, and how to that's going to be Vayikra. The very concept of the national holiday, that's going to be in Sefer Dvarim. That's what we read every Yom Tov. Remember, Shemor Chodesh Aviv, Asita Pesach, and everyone makes Aliyah, Tamachom Asher Yivchar Hashem. And that's going to be the difference. So therefore, I'm putting Vayikra and Bamidbar into a parenthesis of these laws relate to the very fact that God's in our midst, but they're not that. Now, the only exception to that is pretty much Parsha Kedoshim to you, which I think, which I can prove to you, belongs in Dvarim, or in Shemot, probably both, But we purposely insert it in the middle of a Vayikra. It doesn't belong in Vayikra. But insert it in the middle in a chiastic way, which is really neat. If you know chiasms, the Vayikra smack, if you look in Vayikra, smack in the middle is Kedoshim Tiyu. Beforehand is Arayot. After, it's surrounded by Arayot. Then surrounded by Tuman Tara and Kohanim. It's like really neat. It's an important insert because there's a danger. There's a danger. The danger of Vayikra. If God has a house here, and you go visit him, so when am I on the top of my behavior? When I go to visit God, when I go to shul, I'm in best behavior. I'm not going to make people don't go. I'm going to be perfect. The problem is, what happens when you leave shul? There's a danger in God's presence being in a certain place. You understand the danger that's inherent? If God's here, then that's great. But it means also he's only here. So therefore in shul, there's not acting. When I leave shul, what I call resume normal speed. The whole concept of kedusha is not limitation, but it's emanation. That I represent his presence in one place, but the idea is to take that presence in one place and let it emanate to all places. That's the concept of kedusha. So it's like Shabbat. I set aside one day, make it special, and that kedusha emanates the rest of the week. In the same way, a nation, I make one nation special for the sake of all mankind. That's kedusha ha'am. In the same way, kedusha makom, I make one, the same idea of a shul. The idea of a shul isn't that God's presence is one place. I have an intense presence of God in one place, but the experience that I have there is going to emanate, and that's what I take home. That's why we go to shul. That's kind of a big Knesset. Now, we're going to read now from Sefer Dvarim, and we're going to see where we have the so-called contradicting story of what happened in Mount Sinai. We're going to read chapter 5 in Sefer Dvarim. Chapter 5 in Sefer Dvarim, page 765. Page 765. I'll do a one minute overall overview of the book of Dvarim. It's the 40th year. Moshe Rabbeinu is a month before he's about to die. He knows he's not going in the land anymore. He knows the people are going to have a new leader. He knows they have a big job to do. Before he passes on, he's going to give a good farewell speech, and a long one, and a couple of them. His first speech, the first four chapters, he explains to the people how 40, I call it deja vu. He tells the people 40 years ago, we were in the exact same situation, meaning 40 years ago, we were this close to going into Israel. We were all ready to go. We had all the laws. We learned everything. We studied everything. And we were all prepped up to go. And what went wrong? Who messed up? You messed up, not the leaders. The people messed up. And what's Moshe worried about? What's going to happen when he leaves? They're going to mess up again. And therefore, when Moshe Rabbeinu gives his first speech, his goal of his first speech is not to review. He's not a history teacher giving a review class before the final. That's how we usually study it. We read Sefer Dvarim and think, oh, here's a review of Chumash. That's not what's happening in Sefer Dvarim. Moshe Rabbeinu is about to leave. He's a leader leaving. He's worried stiff about what's going to be with the future of the Jewish people. He's giving them a pep talk. He says, don't you guys mess up again. And when you give someone a pep talk, what do you quote from? You quote from historical events, but for what reason? My goal is not to give over history. What's my goal? My goal is to encourage and inspire the people. So what do I quote from? I'm not going to make up stories. I might exaggerate sometimes, but I'm going to focus on the points that support my. You understand what I'm trying to explain? That's a reason for discrepancies. When you understand the background, why is Moshe giving this speech? And Moshe is simply using events, describing events that happened for the purpose of making a speech and making his point. We do that all the time. There's nothing wrong with that. When you understand that, then you understand why there's discrepancies in the story. If your understanding is Moshe's job here as an historian, and his job is to repeat and review what happened like kids before a test, so it's impossible what he's describing. Remember, whose idea was to send them? There's all these details that just don't match. If you understand that his presentation now is for the purpose of inspiring the people, so we do that all the time. And therefore, it's totally legitimate, and Moshe had no intention to be understood any other way. And that explains almost all the discrepancies without a problem. We'll see also the story in Shmot is not, in Bamidbar is not either, neither story is historical. Neither story was written to tell you the history. both stories presenting it, Bamidbar is about leadership. So there the focus is going to be who's responsible from the leadership side. The Gemara is going to be about who's responsible from the people side. And that will explain all the discrepancies. Back to, that's the first speech. Understand? Oversimplified, but that's the first speech. Now we get to the main speech, where Moshe explained to the people in the first speech, we were so close 40 years ago, your parents' generation, they messed up, and what did they mess up? You guys, don't you dare mess up. Now he finished the first speech. He says, now let's talk tachlis. You know what that means, tachlis? Let's talk. They say that in here? Talking tachlis? Let's talk, let's get down to business. And look at the first line in Parakeh. Parakeh, the first line. Vayikra Moshe kol Yisrael v'yomer lehem. Shema Yisrael tachukim v'temishpatim asher nochi dover bo snechem ayom ulamadetem otam ushmartem lasotam. I'll translate loosely. Moshe gathers the whole nation together a second time and tells them, listen everybody, listen to the chukim u'mishpatim that I'm commanding you today. What would you expect to follow now? The next line should be laws. Instead, what's the next line? Hashem Elokeinu krati imanu brit b'chorev. We're on page 305. What are we page on? 765. Moshe tells them God made a covenant in Har Sinai. Why did he? And he's going to go on and tell a story. What's the connection between the second line and the first line? First, he says, "Listen, everybody, I'm about to teach you laws," and then he starts telling a story. Why is he telling a story? But before I tell you laws, hey, where are these laws coming from? Under whose authority are these laws? Why do you have to keep them? Moshe Rabbeinu's first point is, guess what? They're not my laws. I didn't make them up. Whose laws are they? They're God's laws. And not only are they God's laws, they're part of a covenant. And you took upon yourself to keep that covenant. And hence, what story is Moshe going to tell before he gives over the laws? What story does he have to tell? The story of how we got those laws. And hence, we're going to get another version of what story? Of Har Sinai. And the purpose of this second telling has nothing to do with a history review. It's 40 years later, Moshe Rabbeinu has to explain to the people what happened. And his main point is, I'm teaching you laws, but they're not my laws, they're God's laws. And we've already taken it upon ourselves to accept these laws as part of a covenant. And you have to keep them. And there's a purpose in these laws. And there's structure to these laws, etc. And therefore, we're going to get a presentation of the story that will sound a little bit different than the one we had in Shemot, because the goal of that story is different. And the emphases will be different. And as he's telling the story, we'll see, he has to explain what happened in Har Sinai. Because we were at Har Sinai, we got the Ten Commandments. But now that he has an opportunity to tell the Ten Commandments again, what's he going to do? He's going to tell them in a slightly different way. Not because he doesn't know how to repeat himself. What do you gain by saying the same thing twice? We call it, those were my first class, we call it tigbolet. What do you gain by saying the same thing twice, but each time a little bit different? We call that art. we call that composition. You can say something, you say something much more powerful when you say the same thing in two different ways. It's called the same thing with a hologram, the same thing with anything multidimensional. Don't expect... Chumash wasn't written for robots, and human beings aren't robots. And to appreciate things, sometimes there's a lot of things which have what's called two perspectives to them, like Ava and Iran, things like that. And therefore, Moshe takes the opportunity, I'm telling you the laws, Shabbat is a very important law, has many aspects to it, and now that I'm repeating it, and now that Moshe is writing down in the 40th year, what's he saying? The first time he talks the story, in Sefer Shemot he says Zohar. The second time he purposes, changes it to Shamor, and what are we supposed to do? We're supposed to notice the difference and understand what can I learn from the fact it says Zachor and Shamor. Yeah.
When Moshe broke the
tablet
and Hashem had him make new tablets, were these differences also the differences in the actual...
No, the Torah says specifically in the story of the second tablets that the first tablets had the exact same words, word for word, the same thing. Now, what it said in there, we don't know. One day maybe we'll find them. But this is exactly what Torah Shabbat... Listen, I'll give you an example. How Torah Shabbat Peh begins. Chumash tells us in Sefer Shemot what God said. Remember, in Sefer Shemot, when we get the first Ten Commandments, there's nothing in writing. We hear them. How we hear them, what? The topic in Sefer Shemot is how we hear them. It's about fear and about closeness to God, and we're fine-tuning that relationship. That's all the emphasis. How close can we get to God? Do we go up the mountain? Don't we go up the mountain? What do we hear? Do we hear from Moshe, from God? That's the focus of Sefer Shemot. By the time we get to Dvarim 40 years later, God doesn't talk to us anymore. Everything's through Moshe. Moshe's like God to them. And that's why he's afraid that they're going to turn him into an idol again. That's why idol worship is such a big problem in Sefer Dvarim, in this speech. He's going to emphasize, I'm leaving, don't you dare make an image of me. Even though you have good intentions. Now, Am Yisrael hears them. You've all been to a lecture somewhere. Or you've all been to something. You say, what did he say? Oh, he said this, he said this, he said that. Now, everyone heard the same person speaking, and everyone hears something a little bit different. Remember Chazal say, Shnaim, Echad Diber Elohim, Shnaim says Shemanu. That's not one's right and one's wrong. Sometimes you say one thing and you mean two things. I told you, teenagers can do it. God can do it. But teenagers do it sometimes for trickery. God can do it. There's a lot of things you say that have multiple meanings and have depth. Sometimes there isn't a word that means both things. Zohar v'shamar, you can't say it in one word. It's one concept, but it needs to be expressed in two words. When Moshe Rabbeinu is writing down Chumash, he knows he has two opportunities to write the Ten Commandments. He's purposely going to contradict himself or give two different versions. And what are we supposed to do? Because Chumash is written that he wants the reader to read them. What are we supposed to do? Analyze the differences and learn from them. So the question, who has a license to do that? That was the topic last night. But Chazal have the license to interpret that, and that's what they do. And we sing about it on Friday night. That's Zachor v'Shamar b'Dei Baruch Ad. You have the same thing by Amalek, don't you? Zachor and Shamar. Remember? There's tons of mitzvot that are Zachor and Shamar. It's a way of life behind that. But more than that, what's the reason for Shabbat? The reason for Shabbat and Shemot is to remember the God who created. That's the reason what's called Ben Adam Lamakom. What's the reason in Sefer Dvarim for Shabbat? Remember to be nice to the poor. And be nice to those who don't have a day of rest. The reason in Sefer Dvarim is in order that your workers rest. The reason for Shabbat in Sefer Dvarim is a social one between man and his fellow man. And then it says, and therefore remember you were slave in Egypt, and you didn't have a day of rest. When you become God's nation, make sure to give your workers a day of rest. Now, it's two different reasons, but it's the same law. And that theme in Dvarim is over and over again, and that's one of the biggest things in Chumash, that most religions, up until Judaism, the laws of the religion are what's called Ben Adam Lamakom, or between God or between man and God, because that's what religion's about. Along comes Judaism and turns the tables on everything. What's it say? How do you serve God? By how you treat your fellow man. Your service of God is primarily Parshat Mishpatim and the laws in Sefer Dvarim Mosi. You need a lot of reminders of the fact that that's your job. But the fact that the way we serve our God is through our treatment of fellow man, taking the same law of Shabbat and Shemitah. There's so many laws. There's so many laws where you have the exact same law, the same ritual. One time the reason is a mitzvah between God and man. One time the reason is because man and his fellow man. Shemitah. Is it V'shaptah Shabbat Hashem or V'achlu Ev Yonei Amecha? What's Shemitah for? For social justice or for God to remember God? Same thing with Shabbat. Same thing with Shavuot. We can bring a lot of other examples. That's the beauty, that's the message behind the Torah. And that's one of the biggest chidushim. What's chidush? You know what a chidush is. A chidush? Yeah. A chidush. What's the biggest chidush of Judaism? That's what the book's about. That we serve God first and foremost by our behavior among our fellow men. Because we represent God. We're a model nation that we're supposed to be a model for other nations to learn from and for ourselves to learn from. And we also have a lot of rituals as well to remind us what we are. And that's how we connect to God. And therefore, Sefer Dvarim is going to have those laws. And Moshe is going to take the opportunity to present the laws now in a bit different way for the goal of learning from the differences between them. Therefore, he quotes the Ten Commandments. Now, we're going to finish. We have 3 minutes left. Take a look after he quotes the Ten Commandments. We're back in Pasuk Gimel. Pasuk Daled in Perek Hay. We're still on page 4, 765. He tells them in Pasuk Daled, Panim b'fanim diber Hashem b'chem b'tocha esh. God spoke to you face to face. And then it says, you were afraid of God and I was a middleman for you. That's the point of Sefer Dvarim. That even though these laws are from God, I'm the middleman and I told you, you asked me to tell you them. We call it the Ten Commandments, we explained why. And then Moshe continues the story in Pasuk Chaf on page 768. He tells the story, and what's to be the focus of this story? You were so scared and you begged me. You beg me as much as you can. We don't want to hear from God anymore. We want to hear from you. Remember, Sefer Devarim, 40 years later, Moshe is becoming God to them. Moshe is telling them the laws. Moshe has to explain to them, these are God's laws and not my laws. Look, for example, in verse 24. The people tell Moshe, Krava tau shmat kol asher yomar Hashem Eloheinu, v'ata daber eleinu asher yidaber Hashem elech b'shamanu v'asinu. And God heard what your request. He said, great idea. They should always fear me so well. God says, here, it's great that you're fearful of God. Nothing so terrible. See what he says in Pasuk Chavav? Mi tein, which means halabait should only be the what? V'ya levavam zeh liraoti kol ha'amim. They should always be so fearful of God. This is wonderful. It's okay they're afraid of me. And they want to put their trust in you instead. Go tell them to go back to your tents. Pasuk Chav Zayin, 27. Go tell them to go back to your tents. Listen to Pasuk Chav Chet. V'ata, that the people request Moshe to be their middleman. God tells Moshe, tell the people, go back to your tents. Look in Pasuk Chav Chet, verse 28. V'ata po amori madi, you stay here with me in Har Sinai. V'adabra elechet kol ha-mitzvah v'chukim ha-mishpatim asher tzlamdein v'asu ba'aretz asher onochi noten lam l'rishta. What's Moshe supposed to do now for the first 40 days? Moshe stays with God on Har Sinai, and what's God going to tell Moshe? The mitzvah and the chukim and mishpatim that I'm going to tell you that they have to keep where? In the land that they're going into. What do I need to know now? That's the story. That's the background to the laws. Skip to Pasuk Aleph, right on the top of 769. That was the introductory story. Now what's Moshe going to say? V'zot ha-mitzvah v'chukim v'mishpatim asher tzivah Hashem elechem l'lamedechem l'asot baretz asher atem orvim shem l'rishta. What's going to follow now? The laws that God gave me where? On Har Sinai. You see what Sefer Devarim is going to be? Moshe begins a speech now in chapter 5. That's going to go all the way to chapter 26. And what's it going to be? What's it going to include primarily? All the laws that God gave Moshe Rabbeinu on the first 40 days in Har Sinai. Because it's 40 years later, how does Moshe teach them? As he's teaching them, what does he do? He gives them more explanation. He gives some mussar. Remember what happened here. Remember what happened there. But the laws themselves are from 40 years ago. The explanation, the details, the emphases, or after 40 years of experience. What does Chumash prefer to do? Instead of telling us the laws in the way he received them the first time, Chumash prefers to record the laws the last time he teaches it. Understand? Because it's much more powerful, much more meaningful, and it's also the laws as they were heard by the generation that's going to enter the land. And therefore, Sefer Devarim is the missing link in Sefer Shemot. It's not two different versions of the same story. One book fills in what's missing in the other. And you have to understand why and when it was written and the purpose of the book, and that explains almost all the discrepancies. Now, because it's been 40 years, it's a new generation, some of the laws are going to be, things have happened in the meantime. Therefore, the laws will be presented slightly different. And I can learn from those differences. And when I understand why are they a little bit different, it's because what's happened over the last 40 years. Now, if you take a look in, what's the first law? And Teret Vav begins with, this is the mitzvah and chukim mishpatim that God told me in Har Sinai. Guess what the first law is going to be? See Pasuk Dalet? Looks familiar, doesn't it? You ever know that? Shema that we say every day, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad v'hafta. That's the beginning of the speech that Moshe gives after 40 years, which is a reflection of what Moshe Rabbeinu received when? Back in Har Sinai, 40 years ago. What's going to be the first mitzvah? What's the mitzvah? Why is that the most important mitzvah? Because the attitude is the most important thing. And all of it, Chanan and Ekev, the next, from chapter 6 to chapter 11, is all going to be about attitude. Fearing God, loving God, not forgetting God. And the last part is going to be what we call B'hayim Shmo. What we say every day is the beginning and end of that unit. And in chapter 12, we begin the Chukim and Mishpatim. Look in chapter 12, Pasuk Aleph, page 799. We have a little interlude in between. And then, Eila Chukim, see that? Remember how the speech began? Listen to these Chukim and Mishpatim. After the introduction of what's called HaMitzvah, then we finally get Eila Chukim and Mishpatim, Asher Tishmu Nasod Ba'aret Asher Hashem Noten Lechem B'chulei. And from chapter 12 to chapter 26, guess what we're going to find? Shulchan Aruch. Law after law after law after law. Laws we never heard before, most of them. And laws about how we become a nation representing God in the land of Israel. To finish the share, all we need to do is read the last law. The summary pasuk of the speech. In chapter 26. It's going to be page 862. Actually, 861 at the bottom. Take my word for it. You can check it out later on. From chapter 6 all the way to chapter 26. Is the speech. And from chapter 12 to 26, it's simply law after law after law. It's a whole set of laws. Up until there was mostly Musar. And in the finale of the speech, Moshe says as follows. In verse 16, where Shlishi begins, on page 861. Pasuk Tzayin. Hayom hazeh, the day he's been speaking, Hashem elokech mitzavcha lasot et tochim elev et hamishpatim, v'shamarta v'asita otam b'chol levavcha b'chol nafshecha. Who's commanding you to do these laws? Not me. Moshe just spent 20 chapters of laws. What's the summary pasuk? God's commanding you these laws, not me. That's going to be one of the big things of the speech. And that's why the stories are going to be presented from that angle. And that's why the opening. And then we have afterwards, you took upon yourself to be God's people. God took upon himself. We're going right back to Mamad Har Sinai, the event. You'll be an Am Sekula. You'll listen to me, etc. And then, look at the last line. Utitcha Uyon. The laws in Sefer Dvarim are the laws that make the Jewish nation an Am Kadosh. Am Yisrael Har Sinai said, we're willing to be a Mamlechet Kohanim Goy Kadosh. Am Yisrael says yes. What does God tell them at Har Sinai? Here's the Torah. Here's the Torah. Here's the methodology. Here's the plan, the instructions of how to become that nation. Got that? So let me summarize because my time's up. What I try to show you is that when you understand what the books are about, and the Chumash is not linear and it's not a chronicle, but rather each book has its goal and its purpose. And Sefer Shemot, Sefer Dvarim is filling in the missing link. There's a whole chunk of information totally missing from Sefer Shemot on purpose. Sefer Shemot, the focus is the relationship and establishing that relationship and fine-tuning it. Sefer Dvarim will be the book of laws, but Chumash, for its thematic reason, prefers to record the laws that Moshe received 40 years ago and how they were taught 40 years later, the last time Moshe teaches them. And he taught over and over. That's the opening line. Eli, Moshe taught these laws where? Bamidbar, Baravah, Mosul, Ben Paran. Moshe taught these, that's why it's called Mishneh Torah. It's a set of laws that needs constant repetition. That's the mistake everyone makes. Chazal called Mishneh Torah not because Moshe is repeating the laws of the first four books of Chumash. It's Mishneh Torah because this is a set of laws that need constant repetition. Vishinantam levanecha v'dibartabam. These laws require constant repetition because they're the main laws of Chumash. The laws of Kabbalah don't require constant repetition. Therefore, they're called Mishneh Torah. The king has to write down these laws. Sefer Torah. We have to learn them all the time. We read them in Hakel. So when we want to understand what's the reason for the discrepancies, now we have the background. And then when you find discrepancies, now we have a vehicle and a clue to explain them, and we don't need to go into the different authors, different time periods. It's much more, in my opinion, much more logical reason and explanation for the differences. Yeah, question quickly? I'll just give you one because my time's up. Shmuel talks about a Mishkan. Sefer Dvarim talks about HaMakom Asher Yivchar Hashem LaShaken Shmo Sham. Remember that? So what's supposed to be? How come there's no Mishkan in Dvarim? If the laws in Dvarim reflect the first 40 days, had it not been for Chet Egel, we would not have needed a temporary temple. We would have gone to Israel and built a permanent one right away. And therefore, Dvarim doesn't talk about a temporary one because that was because of a specific need. That's the topic of Sefer Shmuel. The Dvarim can reflect the ideal. We go to Israel right away. We're about to go in. And I want to build a permanent house for God. That's what we call the Mikdash. HaMakom Asher Yivchar Hashem. And therefore, there's no mention of the Mishkan in Sefer Dvarim. Okay. What to do with a Bechor? If it's for Chet Egel, what happens with the firstborn? And the firstborn animals is different than what happened after Chet Egel. Again, Sefer Dvarim will talk about Chet Egel, but the laws of Sefer Dvarim reflect the first 40 days. It's going to be one of many. But I try to show you the reason also for why the stories are a little bit different. Now I'm going to leave for you. We didn't have time to do all the source sheets. I didn't think we would, but I have a whole bunch of extra source sheets on top about the Ramban. There's one here, one in big print. It's a Ramban about what Sefer Shmos is about and how the Mishkan is a symbol of Har Sinai. If you want to take it with you, you can read it. It's pretty much everything we talked about. It's a small version of the same page with a couple of boxes on top. If you want to take that, says, otherwise it's shameless. And the structure of the speech in Sefer Dvarim, the main structure and the point of it. There's that one last source sheet up here. It's called The Meaning of the Word Torah and Sefer Dvarim. Torah is a set of instructions to become a Mamlechet Kohanim Goy Kadosh. And the Ramban explains what we did, that when Moshe goes up to get the Torah and the Mitzvah in Har Sinai, that's Sefer Dvarim. Okay? Well, thank you for listening. I know we covered a lot today. There was a lot of information there, and I have to digest it a little bit. I'm trying to show that there's a very good logical reason for the discrepancies, and there's no need to go to... you have to be afraid of them. They're understandable, and they're solvable. And I have to run out because I have a plane to catch, but thank you for...